I had a big decision to make. My boss at the sign company, Billy, was offering me a pretty amazing job. I mean, I was just a shop kid. Like I started out, I needed a job in college. I'd been waiting tables at Bonanza and was just like done with that and wanted something different. And I didn't want to work fast food, and so I thought, I got to find something. So I saw this advertisement to work managing the inventory at South Outdoor Advertising. So they put up billboards, you know, every month that the signs change, and my job was going to be to you know, take the new stuff coming in and put it in bins, you know, based on the customer, the client, and the advertising campaign. And I started out just doing that, keeping track of the inventory. And then that kind of turned into, well, why don't you occasionally help glue up some of these posters and run them through the glue machine? And then that turned into, well, why don't you go with the guys and help them? So I kind of transitioned from shop kid to, you know, glue dude to bill poster. And by the summer, after I began working in that school year, I was like posting signs full time. And you see a picture here. I did that in college. That was my job. And I remember the day, like, I was out with Randy, the manager, and he's like, okay, we're going to train you how to do this. He's scraping. You had to do that once a year. You scrape off all the old, it was the worst part of the job. And he said, we're going to train you. So get up there. There's this ladder, boom, up against the thing. And I had about 3.8 seconds to get over my fear of heights. You know, he's like looking at me like, go. But it was a good job. And so, you know, I worked with some installations and then started posting full time through the summers and helping out during the school week when I could, was still gluing stuff up, and then got to help build a couple of those things. And it was in the act of building one of those, the wind kicked up and I was underneath it and it fell on me. And I'm smart. I broke my fall with my face. And I was in the hospital for a couple of days and, you know, so on light duty for like 6 weeks. And so my boss got to see me in the office doing some customer service stuff and working with people. And so I was just like a week or two away from graduating from Ozark. I had my Bachelor of Theology degree. Deb and I were engaged. I was getting ready to go. I'd been training for 5 years to go into full-time ministry. Been looking forward to it since I was 13. God called me into ministry when I was 13 years old. And my boss, Billy, comes to me and says, hey, Casey, can we talk? Which, you know, when your boss says that, you're like, what do I do? Yeah, sure. And so he said, listen, I've seen you work over the last 2.5 years, really impressed with your work ethic and what you do here, and I'd like to offer you a promotion. Okay. Like I told you, I'm leaving in 2 weeks, right, when I graduate? Yeah, but let's talk about this. He said, what I want to do is have you be our leasing consultant. And you're going to work with the landowners of these, where we have these signs. And be the one, the kind of the forward-facing customer service guy to talk to them about, you know, the leasing rights and acquiring new locations for signs so we can grow the business. And he said, starting pay is $30,000 a year with a company car and an expense account and a company cell phone. This is 1999. Those things were serious luxuries then. And I had a decision to make. Ah, man, I just spent the last 5 years training for ministry. Like, I said, Billy, that's a very kind offer. Thank you very much. I need to say no because I know what God has called me to do. This is a big promotion. And there are days, especially over the last 18 months, when I wonder, what if? But our text today is an assurance that I know even then I made the right choice. So open your Bibles to Genesis 41. Genesis 41. Over the last few weeks, we've been in a sermon series called Hello, My Name is Joe. And we're looking at the life of Joseph in the Old Testament. And I think we can learn a lot from Joseph's life, right? He's got a lot to teach us about relationships and integrity and dealing with hardship and ultimately how to handle success. And that's what we're going to talk about today. All right, so thank you so much for being here. For those of you in the room, I'm grateful that you came and joined us on this beautiful fall morning. For those of you watching online, thanks for logging in. Sorry if you had difficulty earlier. Grateful that you could be joining us again and thankful that you did that. And whether you're on site or online, take a second, fill out your connection card. That really helps us care for you better when we know that you're here and that just is a thing for us. Before we get back into the text, there's something I need to tell you. November 7th is going to be a big day for Chapel Rock, all right? We are excited about what's coming on November 7th, all right? We're starting a new sermon series that day called Away Game. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but the church is no longer the home team in our culture. And so we're going to talk about this idea of what does it mean to be the visitors and to play an away game. Pastor Fred's going to start that series off because hashtag sports. I know stuff, I do. Anyway, we're excited about that. Honestly, originally he was slated to do that because I was supposed to be in Israel, and then that didn't happen. So we're excited about that. That's also the day of our annual meeting, so we'll vote on the budget and new elders, so be here for that just as part of our service. But because we're doing this kind of sports theme thing, we thought it would be fun to have a tailgate party. So on November 7th after church, we're going to do a tailgate party, hot dogs and chips and apple cider and stuff and cornhole out in the yard. And, you know, I love Back to Church Sunday. That was great, but it was hot. So we're going to try again here and do that. And so we want to encourage you to come. It'll be a great time. And then after that, when this wraps up at about 2 o'clock, is about the Operation Christmas Child packing party. So this is kind of old school. Like, you could just make a day of it, you know. Wear your jersey. That's okay. Come comfy. I'm going to be wearing jeans in a jersey, so like, you just come casual and comfy, and we're going to have a great day on November 7th, all right? Want to jump back into the text. This is kind of a long passage, and it can be easy to get lost in the details, all right? This is narrative. This Old Testament narrative, and so it, sometimes if you're not watching closely, you can kind of get all wrapped up in some of the details here. It can also be hard to apply directly. Like probably none of you are ever going to be in the same position Joseph was in. Like, I seriously hope that never happens to you. Everything he went through. But I do think there are some things we can learn from his story. All right. Here's the big idea I want to put in front of you this morning. If you want a big promotion from God, you have to be the kind of servant he's looking for. If you want a big promotion from God, you have to be the kind of servant he's looking for. And I think in this passage, we find four important qualities of the kind of servant that God is looking for in the story of Joseph. All right, I want you to look for him as we read his story together. Look with me at Genesis 41, starting in verse 1. When 2 full years had passed, this is 2 years since the passage we looked at last week, right? Where Joseph meets the chief baker and the cupbearer in prison. 2 years goes by. Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. No kidding. Like, that is disturbing. That dream will mess with you. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. East is an interesting symbol in the Bible. Sometimes it's a bad thing, sometimes it's a good thing, right? The sun rises, you know, in the east, but the east wind is never a good symbol in the Bible. This is bad, okay? The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Kind of the beginning, the leading edge of the whole idea that we're going to see in Exodus, how God's servants have power and the magicians of Egypt don't. It's just kind of, it kind of establishes that framework. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." You're like, what? Go back and listen to last week's sermon. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God. By the way, that's my favorite phrase in the whole Bible. Those two words. If you have Bible study software or you know how to use Google, just go home and put it in quotes and just type, but God. And spend the next hour of your life just reading about all the amazing ways God turns people's story around. It's awesome. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. It's not the answer he wanted to hear. It's the fact that he got an answer. The answer he desires is God will answer you, okay? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream, I was standing on the bank of the Nile when out of the river there came up seven cows, fat and sleek, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the seven fat cows that came up first. But even after they ate them up, no one could tell that they had done so. They looked just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. In my dream, I saw seven heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven good heads. I told this to the magicians, but none of them could explain it to me. Now, some of you are going, why in the world did they just say all the same stuff over again? You need to realize this was originally told orally. How do you remember a story? By hearing it over and over and over again, right? How many of you can quote movie lines from a movie because you've seen it like 60 times? Anyway, right, so that's what's going on here. It was originally designed to be told orally. That's why the repetition happens. I could go back and read it. I know. Okay, so that's what's going on here. Verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. So you see what he's telling him, right? 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. And then Joseph, just without being asked, puts forward this plan. He just tells Pharaoh what to do. He says, you need to find a wise and discerning man, put him in charge, have him appoint commissioners, right? Every year they're going to take a fifth of the harvest. He's like dictating this plan to him. They're going to take 20% of the harvest every year and store it away in cities, and we'll collect the food, and we'll hold it in reserve, and then when the famine comes, we'll have food when nobody else does. All right? So the land won't be ruined, he says. Look at verse 37. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there's no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Joseph gets a big promotion here. I mean, think about it. He goes from being an enemy of the state to secretary of state. In an afternoon. Boy, you want to talk about a story that goes up and to the right. Wow. He goes from not even owning the clothes on his back to being blinged out by Pharaoh's personal servants. Right? Whoa. Why? Why did God pick Joseph for this? Well, let me put this out there in front of you. I think it's because he knew Joseph could handle it. Because he was the kind of servant that God is looking for. The reason God picked Joseph is that God knew that Joseph could do this. He's the kind of servant that God's looking for. And so I think we have to ask the question this morning, well, what qualities did he have that maybe we could learn something about so that we could be the kind of servant that God is looking for? Now, is he going to make you Secretary of State? Probably not. You're young. Who knows? But that may not be your trajectory. But I believe he does want to use you. He does want to use you to do good in the world just like he used Joseph. So what kind of qualities did Joseph had that God's looking for that we could have? I think there are four. Here's the first one. Number one, he was a servant that depends on God. He was a servant that depends on God. Joseph's been in prison for 2 years. I mean, he's been promoted to the lead prisoner, you know, but he's still a slave and he's still in prison. And throughout this whole process, he's depending on God to work out the situation. Church, I want you to hear me. Sometimes we rush God when he's working on something. And we just need to wait on and depend on him. Can I pull the curtain back a little bit? Can I just give you a peek into the pastor's office today? Y'all, it is rough having to talk to somebody and try to help them put their life back together when they ran out in front of God. It's one of the least favorite parts of my job. Because they got so far ahead of God, they wouldn't wait on him, they wouldn't trust him, they wouldn't depend on him, they got way out in front and they got hurt. And they're like, Pastor, fix it. Okay, let's talk about what happened. And if I could encourage you about from Joseph's life, church, I think it would behoove us, especially in the American church, to learn to wait on God a little better instead of getting so far out in front of him on stuff and depend on him. Eventually, because Joseph depends on God, God puts him in front of Pharaoh, right? Here's his chance. Now, you need to know, at the time of Joseph's life, you know, this is, you know, like 1900 BC, give or take. So at this time, Egypt is the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. Pharaoh is the most powerful man on the face of the earth. And Joseph has a shot to talk to this guy. And I mean, he could have said, Pharaoh, I'll give you the answer. I'll tell you, but I've been unjustly imprisoned. And I'll only tell you if you let me out. But he doesn't do that, does he? No, because he's depending on God to take care of the situation. So he does the rightest right, right? And he gives away his only bargaining chip at this point because he's depending on God. He's depending on him. In verse 16, then, there's this interesting blend of appreciation for Pharaoh's appraisal of what he's heard about Joseph, heard good things about you, right? Joseph's honesty about his own limitations and his effort to give God glory while expressing confidence that God can and will respond effectively to the situation. You know, Joseph has put all his eggs in God's basket as a servant, at least. He's just trusting God to take care of it. Later in verse 38, Pharaoh recognizes that God's spirit is at work in Joseph. And listen, one of the best ways that you can know that you're fulfilling God's purpose for you in your work as a parent, as a grandparent, as a neighbor, is when your friends, your family, your coworkers see God in what you do. If they see the hand of God at work in you, if they see God at work in the way that you live your life, in the way that you do your work, it's a powerful way for you to point, even in the way that you work, to God and to say, yeah, he's the one who motivates this. I'm depending on him to do this well. Many years ago, a woman got hired at a textile mill. She got a job, and there was a sign prominently posted in the mill that said, when your thread becomes tangled, call the foreman. That's all it said. When your thread becomes tangled, call the foreman. Seven words, right? And so she got this job, and she was really proud to have this job, and she wanted to work hard. And so she got to work on it, and sure enough, I mean, you're new. Have you ever seen a textile mill? They're incredibly complicated. Lots of machinery, stuff going everywhere. And sure enough, her thread got tangled, right? And she worked it and worked it, worked it, and it just got worse. Right? And she was falling further and further behind. Finally, she called the foreman, and he came over, and he said, okay, here's what you did. And she said, I tried my best. And he said, no, you didn't. She said, but I did my best. He said, no, you didn't. The sign says to call me. If you were doing your best, you would have called me immediately when this got tangled. And I think, church, what Jesus might be telling you today is, if your thread is tangled in your work, in your family, in your life, call the foreman. Depend on him. Lean into what he wants to do in you. I mean, if there's anything we can learn from Joseph, it's that he depended on God. Did he make some mistakes early on in his youth? Yes. Did he say some stuff when he should have kept his mouth shut? Absolutely. But he depended on God. You know, if you want to be the kind of servant that God is looking for, no matter what your work is, even if you're done working, you know, to depend on him. That's the first quality. Here's the second, is a servant that's always ready. A servant that's always ready. The United States Coast Guard has an official motto. It's Semper Paratus. It's Latin. It means always ready. And Joseph was that way. If you go back to the scene in Pharaoh's courtroom, right, we see Pharaoh's throne room, excuse me, we see Joseph's readiness. Not only is he ready, he's bold in his readiness. Look at verse 33 again. Look at this. He says, this is Pharaoh, or this is Joseph speaking. He says, now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Like, 45 minutes ago, this guy was in jail. And he's now dictating official government policy to the most powerful man on the planet. I want you to get the impact of this. I want you to imagine that you go home from church today and you have a nice lunch and you're sitting there in your living room, in your comfy pants, you know, whatever, and you're hanging out and the phone rings and it's someone, a switchboard operator, and she says, excuse me, and uses your name. President Biden is on the other line and he'd like to talk to you about his COVID policy. Well, good, because I have a couple ideas. Right? Like this mind-blowing. Here's this guy, this is a nobody. And he gets to talk to the most powerful man on the planet, and he's dictating policy to him. His boldness here is staggering. Why? Because he's ready. He lived his life in a state of readiness to serve. Why would he do that? Is he self-motivated? Is God directing his language? Is he just responding to Pharaoh's body language, who hears there's going to be 7 years of famine, and he's like, oh, no. Maybe all of it. I don't know. But I think primarily it's because he's ready. He does that because he's ready. He's able to be that bold because he's ready to serve. He lives his life in a readiness to serve, and when the opportunity to do that arises, he capitalizes on it. Listen, if you want to be free from fear, And always ready to jump in at a moment's notice, you don't have to go watch every episode of Man vs. Wild. You just need to live your life in a constant readiness to serve whenever God presents the opportunity. My college roommate, Ken Rawson, got to come to Indianapolis last month for Gen Con. And I got to spend an afternoon with my old buddy. And it was awesome. I had been years since I'd seen him. And he's still, you know, like the same guy I remember from the 2.5 years that we roomed together at Ozark, you know, except that now the hair that was on the top of his head is now on his face. But other than that, he's like the same dude. And man, he just, Ken's the ultimate extrovert, never met a stranger. He's a really great guy. But we'd only known each other for like a couple hours by this point. And we weren't even roommates at this point. We just dorm mates on the same floor. And they called us all together, all the freshmen, for freshman orientation. Right? So they have everybody sit down in the chapel in at the time pews that are similar to what you're sitting in right now. And we're sitting there, and they're going to elect class officers. Like, we've literally known these people like 4 hours, right? But we got to choose president and vice president and all that stuff, right? So Ken got nominated for class president. Again, hyper extrovert. Everyone already knew Ken, right? So he's sitting there, you know, in the auditorium, just, you know, hanging out, and they announce his name as president. And he does this. He stands up and he goes, ready to serve. Just like that. Sounds like Tommy Boy in the movie, ready to serve, you know, and they voted for me. And then he got nominated for vice president. And same deal, stood up again, ready to serve. And they voted for J.P. Jones. And he got nominated for secretary. And he stood up, ready to serve. And they voted for Art Metheny. And then he got nominated for treasurer, the last one, right? He stands up, ready to serve every time. And finally, when the class voted for Ken, he got a standing ovation. You know, from the whole group, because he just lived his life that way. Listen, I want you to understand this, church. You need to understand that God is more interested in your availability than your ability. Now, he wants you to give him every ability you've got. And if you have the opportunity to grow your ability, you should. Some guys fresh out of Bible college will ask me, do you think I should go to seminary? And here's my answer. Do you feel like you've got all the tools you need in your toolbox and they're as sharp as they can be? No? Then it's probably a good idea. Because seminary will put more tools in your box and it'll sharpen the ones you got. So if you have the opportunity, yes, grow your ability. But what God is really interested in is your availability. Just like my roommate Ken. Ready to serve. That's what he's looking for. And if you'll be ready to serve, God will make sure you'll always have a place to do it. And there's a third quality that God is looking for in his servants, and it's a servant that works hard. It's been said that God gives the birds their food, but he doesn't throw it in their nest. That God expects us to work. I want you to think about this. Work existed before the fall. Genesis says God put Adam and Eve in the garden to work it. Now, it was not toil. I mean, they're basically hanging out in the yard gardening all day, you know. But work existed before the fall. Work is not inherently evil. Joseph was a hard worker. And when we read about how Joseph is given the symbols of his office in verse 41 through 46, right? This is formal investiture language. It's like when the you know, president lays his hand on the Bible and, you know, swears to fulfill the oath of office. And these symbols cover the whole gamut of life, right? The signet ring shows that he acts with the full weight of Pharaoh's authority behind him. The fine linen robe and gold chain befit his status as the lead servant of the most powerful man on earth. Joseph is given a chariot to speed his errands for the throne around Egypt. He's given an entourage to take care of his needs and handle security. Not only that, he's given a wife. How many of you ever got a promotion where your wife came with the deal? Whoa! But here's why. Probably she was the daughter of the lead priest of Egypt. And she's able to school him on all the intricacies of court life because she understands it. He doesn't. Why? He's been in jail. It's a huge promotion. And he gets everything he needs to get this done. Right? Why? He's a hard worker. And rather than enjoy the fruits and perks of power, he gets right to work. Remember, just hours earlier, he'd been in prison. And he gets everything, and that only makes him work harder. Look at verse 48 and 49. Look at this. He says, Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. And then verse 49 says this. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain, like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Now, this speaks to two things. First of all, God's providence in the land just producing so much. But secondly, it's Joseph's working hard. He's really a hard worker. And these two verses really compress 7 years into just a very short amount of space. In 7 years, Joseph gathers so much food, it can't even be counted. He's working hard to make sure that they can survive the next 7 years. C.S. Lewis, in his book, The Weight of Glory, wrote this. The work of a Beethoven and the work of a charwoman, this is a woman who tends the fireplace in these large aristocratic English homes, become spiritual on precisely the same condition, that of being offered to God, of being done humbly as to the Lord. This does not, of course, mean that it is for anyone a mere toss-up whether he should sweep rooms or compose symphonies. A mole must dig to the glory of God and a rooster must crow. We all have different gifts. We have different abilities. We do different jobs. But the point is that God is looking for servants who will work with all their hearts as unto the Lord. Joseph worked hard, and God saw fit to promote him. One other quality that God is looking for, and it's a servant that has a purpose. It's a servant that has a purpose. Listen, Joseph isn't perfect. He makes mistakes. But the one thing he got right is that he knew his purpose, right? He knew, maybe through his dreams, maybe through God's spirit, that God had a purpose and a plan for him. And so he serves God as well as those in authority over him, first Potiphar and then the jailer and eventually Pharaoh. He serves them with diligence and excellence because he has a sense of purpose. And we see this, we didn't read this passage, but you can see this in verse 50 and verse 53 through 55. We see this in the story. God moves his plan forward. Joseph has a couple boys, two sons who go on to be named as half tribes of Israel, you know, Ephraim and Manasseh. What's interesting is that both boys are named in such a way as they recall Joseph's struggles. It's Joseph's hardships, but they give testimony to the purpose and plan of God in his life. Here's the thing. Joseph's life teaches us, if it doesn't teach us anything else, it teaches us this, that following God's plan at times may seem really, really hard and not very fun, but it is still the best way to live. It is still right and good. And following God's plan is a good idea, even when it doesn't make sense. And especially to you younger people in the audience, I would say this. The world may tell you that what God tells you, that doesn't make sense. Why in the world would you save yourself for marriage and maybe a virgin on your wedding day? Why in the world would you give in the offering? That doesn't make sense. The world will tell you God's plan doesn't make sense. Joseph's story tells you it does. It's been said that faith is believing in advance what will only make sense in reverse. When you have a sense of purpose, this is what God put me here to do, it changes the whole way you live your life. Following God's way is sometimes hard and it doesn't seem to make sense. Only later do we understand. You know that in Joseph's day, there were people who said, whoa, you're going to put a 20% tax on all of our growth from our fields. One fifth. Every year for the next 7 years, I didn't vote for you. Sorry, it's not how it works. And now, here, can you imagine 7 years later, there's no food anywhere, global famine, except in Egypt. They got food there. Why? Because he did the hard thing early. I imagine 7 years on, maybe 7.5, 8 years on, there were some mighty big helpings of crow that were being eaten in Egypt. See, a lot of times the difficulties we face are designed to accomplish God's purpose in us. And he's looking for servants who understand and are willing to submit their lives to his purpose. Do you know what God put you here to do? In his book, The Shape of Faith to Come, Brad Wagner writes this: serving God and others is a mark of spiritual maturity. In fact, without service, spiritual transformation is impossible. Even Jesus said the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. If you're going to find wholeness, you have to embrace a life of service. And many of you have, and I thank you. But you need to know that this is, it goes way beyond just a few hours on a Sunday or every Sunday for, you know, every third month or something. God is looking for servants who understand a bigger sense of purpose. That what they do, even in the way that they do their work, it matters to God. It matters to other people. And when God finds somebody like that, he is quite happy to promote them. When I was in college, I had a shot at a big promotion. It would have put me on a path to success in business, I guess. I don't know, I didn't take it. And I'm glad. I know that I made the right call. But there's an interesting twist to this story. Fast forward 6 or 8 months. I don't remember exactly when. But we were in our first ministry in rural southeast Kansas, 400 people in this little town. And Deb and I found out we were expecting Emma. Deb was just a few months pregnant with our oldest, who got married this past summer. And that day of the week, my birthday was my birthday. And so we thought, well, I'm going to move my day off and take my birthday as a day off. And we didn't have any kids yet by that point. So, young newlywed couple, we're going to stay up late and watch movies and then sleep in the next day and just have a nice lazy day. We're going to play rich, right, the next day. So we drove up to Parsons, Kansas in a little 1988 Ford Tempo named Trusty. It was this little car, little black car. And watching the lightning, the thunderclouds moving across southeast Kansas. And, you know, we're young and dumb, and we weren't listening to the radio. And what we did not know is a massive storm system was moving in. We're watching the lightning going, ooh, pretty. Turn on the radio. And we got caught in a Kansas twister. Got to Parsons and eventually just had to stop in the middle of the street. And we heard commercial air conditioning units from the grocery store next to us landing in the street around us. And I've never prayed so loud in my whole life. I thought I had to be heard over the storm. And I can be loud. I'm sure you can imagine. So I believe with my whole heart that God just reached down and he just put his hand over that car and just held it down like this. I'm pretty sure he also left his fingers open because stuff got between him and trashed the car. I wish he would have done that. Like, you know, cup. But he did this. And he held it in the street and our little Trusty got trashed. So, you know, we borrowed Deb's dad's vehicle for a while and went to Joplin, big city, buy a new car. Joplin has a dealership there named Roper. Roper is to Joplin what Andy Moore is to Indianapolis, right? They're everywhere. There's all these different dealerships and stuff. So we went there, and the only reason I knew about it was because that little dealership that sold used cars was at the base of one of the signs that I used to work on. And about a year prior, had done this huge project to clear all the brush out from underneath the sign, and we changed it out and stuff. And I over the years of working at that sign, I'd seen, you know, they tend to have pretty good deals. Like, good cars, reasonable prices. So that's where we went. And we're sitting there, buying the car. We found, a Plymouth Breeze. We could afford it. We knew we were expecting, so we wanted to make sure we had a family car, a lot of room. And we're doing the paperwork, and Mr. Roper walks in. No, not the guy from Three's Company, right? Like, the owner of the business walks in. And, you know, new young couple. He's out checking on all his used car sites. And, oh, hey, what are you doing? We're buying this car. And, oh, what brought you in today? And I said, well, I used to work for South Outdoor Advertising and actually cleared the brush out behind this store here. And that's why we came here today. And this was his response. And I quote, you used to work for Billy? Oh, man, Billy's my friend. Me and Billy used to smoke cigars together. Joe, I want you to take $500 off the price of this car right now. It really is true. It's not what you know, it's who you know. I didn't do anything for this guy. And I turned Billy's offer down. But in the end, the Lord took care of his servant. And I don't know about you, but I call that a promotion. You know, the Lord had another servant. It was one who depended on him totally. It was one who spent 30 years getting ready for a 3-year mission. It was one who worked so hard his family thought he was crazy and whose purpose was so clear, he saved the world. Do you know him? I mean, I want you to get to know Joe, but I really want you to know Jesus. Because Joe saved the world from a famine, but Jesus saved you from your sins. And Jesus washed him away with his blood shed on the cross and provided a massive promotion for you. Do you know him? Listen, if you want a big promotion from God, you got to be the kind of servant he's looking for. And his Spirit can help you do that if you'll let him, if you'll yield to him, if you'll give Jesus your life. You need to know that one day he will give you a promotion that is out of this world. But you have to give him your life. You've got an opportunity to do that now. We're going to sing a song of decision. If you've never yielded your life to Jesus, I would encourage you to come forward as we sing. If you have a prayer need or want someone to pray with you, we'd be happy to do that too. I'm going to ask you to stand with me, and we're going to sing together, and you respond as God leads you today.